So have you ever complained about something? You know? Harold, that was a good amen. You nailed that one. That was good. The porridge is too hot. The porridge is too cold. The bed is too soft. The bed is too hard. The music is too loud. The music is too low. The sermon is too long. The sermon is too short. I mean, I get that one a lot, and I appreciate that. I'll work on that, you know. I think it was music producer Bruce Dickinson who once said, "Don't complain about the clowns in your life. Instead, ask yourself why you keep going to the circus." It's there. Earlier this year, a restaurant received a complaint on social media. Here is part of the complaint. "This Saturday, myself and my friend, who are both aging, decided to have a miserable night out at your venue. So we arrived in a cantankerous mood, expecting to have a horrible night. You made sure we enjoyed the night. Shame on you." The owners replied, "We are absolutely mortified. You arrived fully committed to having a dreadful evening, and we completely failed you. That's on us. We are willing to offer a compromise. You're both hereby sentenced to return for another terrible evening." No matter who you are, how old you are, where you're from, what's happening in your life, complaining is just part of life, whether we are being complained to or we are the ones doing the complaining. But is there a right way and a wrong way to complain? Well, we'll see. Our series continues for the month of August called Good Point. And what we're doing in this series is looking at places in the Bible that use the word behold. And the word behold, it means to look at something. It means to draw your attention to something, pointing something out to you, pointing out a reality. A reality that can change how you think. And as we change how we think, we can change how we live. Our actions can change. So this behold, this pointing to a reality, can actually change things in our lives. And today, we're going to see a behold that we hope will change how we pursue complaining. Our message today is called "Here is the Mood," and we are going to be looking in James chapter 5, verse 9. This is what James says. "Do not complain, brothers and sisters, against one another." Straight out of the chute, James comes out and he says, look, that Christians should not be complaining against one another. Now, does it mean that's always wrong to complain? Well, the original Greek word here that James used had a meaning 2,000 years ago, and the meaning was something like this. This type of complaining is when we are griping and grumbling and complaining directly toward other believers because of some difficulty that we're facing in life. The fact that he says brothers and sisters is he's writing to Christians, he's writing to church people, and he's basically saying this: don't turn on one another. Life is too hard for Christians to turn on one another, for Christians to be in the habit of griping and grumbling and complaining against one another. Now, does that mean we always have to agree on everything? No, that's not what it's saying at all. It just means that our disagreements should not turn into this bitter, resentful griping and grumbling all the time toward one another. Why? Well, generally speaking, most of us have discovered in life that griping and grumbling and complaining don't really get things done. I mean, if we use military language, an army who is fighting against one another, they're not going to be able to fight against their enemy. So the idea is that we don't need to be turning on one another, shooting each other in the foot, so to speak. We don't need to be attacking one another with complaints and grumbling. The Apostle Paul was writing to the church at Philippi, and he said it this way, Philippians chapter 2, verse 14 and 15, "Do all things without complaining or arguments, so that you will prove yourselves to be children of God in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation." Are we living In the midst of a crooked and perverse generation? Yes, we are. And 200 years ago, your great-great-grandparents were living in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation. And 2,000 years ago, Paul was living in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation. And 20 years ago, we were living in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation. In fact, we can go all the way back to the garden. A comedian has once said, we couldn't even get to five people on earth before there was murder. There's always been a crooked and perverse generation, no matter what generation we're talking about. Every generation in some way is crooked and perverse, and that's why every generation needs Christians. It needs local churches that are living like a family, that are living like a good army, fighting together instead of fighting against one another. A community of people who are not known for being complainers and grumblers and gripers against one another. The nice thing about being able to preach this sermon this morning is we're just not a griping, grumbling, complaining church, and I'm real thankful for that, you know. We had somebody visiting a number of years ago, and they said, hey, what happens when there's problems? You know, what happens when there's divisions and there's fights? How do y'all handle those things? And I said, well, we don't have any. He's like, come on. I was like, no, we really don't. God's being very gracious to our church, you know. I said, it doesn't mean that we don't complain and gripe and grumble sometimes, but not to the degree that it affects the ministry of the church. We really do fight to be together, and that's a great thing. So why is it so important that Holland Avenue Baptist Church and any church of the gospel is together for the gospel, that it's not known as a complaining, griping community? Stephen Bartlett hosts a podcast called The Diary of a CEO. He is, I believe in his own words, a self-proclaimed agnostic, meaning agnostic is someone who doesn't necessarily believe there's not a God. It's just that there's no real way that we could possibly know there is one. A couple of months ago, he interviewed John Lennox. John is an 82-year-old mathematician, bioethicist, and Christian apologist from Northern Ireland. And in the interview at one point, Bartlett said this to John Lennox: one of the most compelling arguments for God that you've presented is not actually necessarily anything you've written in your books or not necessarily anything you've said. It is actually you. And you have a certain peace and contentment that I rarely see in people that I interview, but I often see, and I've almost always seen, in the Christians that I've interviewed. And that is an interesting phenomenon for me. Can that be said of us? I mean, look, we're all going to have our days and our moments. We're even going to have some seasons of life where complaining and griping and grumbling may seem to kind of take over our minds and our hearts and our attitudes. But generally speaking in life, the people who are around us the most, the people who know us the most, would they say that we're known for having a certain peace and contentment? James says this: do not complain, brothers and sisters, against one another. In the sense, if you're doing it, stop or don't start. Do not complain. And why? Look at the next part of verse 9. Do not complain, brothers and sisters, against one another, so that you may not be judged. Again, this verb here is stop. You know, if you're doing this, don't do it. And if you have never started, well, don't start. Why? So that you won't be judged. I mean, that's strong language, right? Judge. It's supposed to be strong language. Earlier in chapter 2, James said this, James 2:13, for judgment will be merciless to one who has shown no mercy. Mercy triumphs over judgment. See, the danger of a Christian making it a pattern to gripe and grumble and complain directly and toward other believers, particularly in the life of the church, is it's the opposite of showing mercy. It's the opposite of showing mercy. And James is describing what we see other places in the New Testament. If you do not show mercy, you will not get mercy. Do we need any other argument for not griping and grumbling and complaining toward one another? If we do not show mercy to others, it's almost as if we are saying we haven't received the mercy of God. We show mercy because we've been shown mercy. We give mercy because we've been given mercy. And when we don't, it exposes something about our lives. See, we're not called to play favorites. We're not called to start grumble groups. We're called to show mercy. Just look at the life of Jesus. Jesus did not play favorites, and he did not start grumble groups. Jesus showed mercy to all kinds of people, right? I mean, we see it throughout the scriptures, to prostitutes, to adulterers, to tax collectors, to Pharisees, to fishermen, to priests, to Jews, to Gentiles, to slaves, to masters. Jesus showed mercy. One day there was two blind men that called out to Jesus, "Have mercy on us." And those two blind men heard two responses to their cry. One of the responses came from the crowd. And the crowd said, "Pipe down. Just be quiet. Stop. Go away. We don't want to see you in our peripheral. Go, go, go." And then the other response they heard was from Jesus. "What is it that you want me to do for you?" Mercy. When you think of the general patterns of your life, which one do we sound like? Do we sound like the crowd, particularly when we're talking about believers in the church, not just people in general, but believers in the church when they're seeking mercy? Do we show mercy or do we say, "Get out of here, pipe down"? Why should we not start, and if we are, stop griping, grumbling, complaining against one another so that we will not be judged? James says, so that we will not be condemned, exposed for not showing mercy. Again, in other words, complaining and grumbling and griping toward one another on a regular basis, it exposes that we're not living like a faithful Christian. We're actually living like an unfaithful Christian. So are we faithful or unfaithful? James raises the stakes a little more. Look at the last part of verse 9. "Behold, the judge is standing right at the door." There's our word. Behold. James is saying, look at this. I want to point you in the direction of this reality. This is super important. This is a reality that can change how you think, change how you live, can change your life. And that "behold" is pointing to this reality. God is standing at the door. Not just God in general, God the judge is standing at the door. He's right there when we're griping and grumbling and complaining toward one another. About 3,472 years ago, after the Hebrew people had been rescued from slavery, they started grumbling against Moses and Aaron. And this is what they said, Exodus 16:3. "If only we had died by the Lord's hand in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the pots of meat, when we ate bread until we were full. For you have brought us out into this wilderness to kill this entire assembly with hunger." In other words, what they said was, sure, when we were in Egypt, we were slaves. We weren't free. We had to work impossible jobs with impossible work that no one could ever do. And if we didn't do a good job, and even if we did do a good job, sometimes we would be beaten. And some of our people were beaten, they died from those beatings. But at least we had plenty of Hot Pockets. Man, I wish we were still there. It doesn't make rational sense. But see, this is what happens when life gets hard. When things get difficult, we are prone, all of us, are prone to be gripers and grumblers and complainers. We are. And most of the time, we tend to gripe and grumble and complain toward the people that we are usually in relationships with. We won't gripe and grumble at strangers, right? I mean, the age-old adage that I learned more so with my mom than my dad, and my mom and I got along great, but the primary caregiver usually gets the brunt of stuff. That's just how it works. You know why? Because they're there. They're helping. They're there the most. So this picture we have is behold, look, God is there. He's standing as a judge. And then when we see the people, the Hebrew slaves, when they were set free, things got difficult and they started complaining and griping. And this is what Moses said back to them. Exodus 16:8. Your grumblings are not against us, but against the Lord. They had been given the gift of freedom, a gift that was beyond any dream they could imagine at the time. There was absolutely no hope that they would ever be set free from Egypt. But they were given the gift of freedom. And they did not get that gift of freedom because they fought a good war against the Egyptians. And they didn't get that gift of freedom because there was some great rebel army that came in and rescued them. They were free first and most and primarily and only because of the grace of God. God's grace set them free. But then they started grumbling. Things got tough. And Moses says, look, you think you're grumbling against us, but you're not. You're grumbling against God. You're grumbling against grace. As believers, if our attitude is consistently marked with griping and grumbling and complaining toward one another, in a way, we are denying, at least for that moment, we're kind of denying the grace of God in our lives. So when James says God is standing right at the door, he's trying to remind us of something very important that truthfully, it's hard for us to understand in the moment. But he's trying to remind us that there is coming a day where God is going to handle everything. If you've been wronged, God's going to handle it. So you don't have to plot revenge. God will handle it. God will make everything right. He will deal with every single person in the universe, past, present, and future. So we don't have to plot revenge. We can leave things in the Lord's hands. If you've been wrong, God will deal with it. And if you've wronged someone, God will deal with it. There's no need for us to make excuses. There's no need for us to shift blame, to gripe or grumble or complain against one another. James is saying, look, when you look at the story of your life, don't be the complainer. Don't be the complainer in every aspect of your life. Don't be the griper and the grumbler, particularly, he's saying, in the church. Because the reality is the Lord will deal with us. The one true righteous judge will deal with everyone. When Jesus comes again, what will he find us doing? Will he find us showing mercy or complaining? Now look, let's not take this too far, you know, because there is this notion of, man, I hope Jesus doesn't come back in the middle of a fight with my spouse, right? I mean, can you imagine like the moment of Jesus returns and like, you know, you're sitting in the car at the restaurant, you know, arguing in the car, you know, about the bill or whether or not you should have got potatoes or sweet potatoes or whatever it may be, you know? But the reality is in general, what is it that we would want Jesus find us doing? Showing mercy or complaining against one another? Moses told the people they were grumbling against God, and that's not good. But I will say there is a positive aspect of this notion of grumbling toward God, or really maybe better, complaining toward God. And it goes back to what we said at the beginning. Is there a right or wrong way to complain? King David was hiding out in a cave, and this is what he was praying in the cave. Psalm 142. I cry out with my voice to the Lord. With my voice, I implore the Lord for compassion. I pour out my complaint before him. Somebody once noted, there is a faithful and faithless way to complain. The faithful way to complain is to say, God, everything in my life is falling apart. I mean, as of tomorrow morning, I may have like four cars in the shop, You know, I mean, come on. We all have moments where everything seems to be falling apart. But the picture of a faithful complainer is, Lord, help. Lord, here's my complaint. I'm giving it to you. And the reason I'm giving it to you is because I know, Lord, that you are good. You are competent. You are merciful. You are faithful. You are sovereign. And you are loving. So I'm going to give my complaint to you. That's the mood of complaining that's faithful and good. But then there's a mood of complaining that is faithless. It's a mood where we are complaining, maybe still toward God, because we don't like what he's doing or what he's allowed. And we complain in such a way that we are thinking and speaking and acting as if he's not good. And he's not merciful, and he's not faithful, and he's not competent, and he's not sovereign, and he's not loving. That's a faithless complaint. But how do we know God is always those things? How do we know, even in our difficulty, when things are falling apart, when we're overwhelmed, when we're stressed, when we're anxious, when we're angry, when we're afraid, whatever it may be, how do we know that God is still good? How do we know he's still faithful? How do we know he's still merciful and sovereign? How do we know God is still loving? When everything is falling apart, how do we know God is still loving? We know because of the cross. We know because of the cross of Jesus Christ. We know because 6 hours one Friday, Jesus loved us and gave himself up for us. That's how we know God is still and always loving. Because of what he has done in and through Jesus, and the reality that what he has done never stops working. Never. Fanny Crosby was struck with blindness when she was just 6 weeks old. She never regained her sight. She lived in darkness for 94 years. But she never grumbled or griped or complained about her blindness, because her blindness did not define her life. Her salvation in Jesus Christ defined her life. She wrote over 8,000 songs about how her salvation in Jesus. And here's part of just one of them that she wrote in 1869. Near the cross, I'll watch and wait, hoping, trusting ever, till I reach the golden strand just beyond the river. The finished work of Jesus Christ on the cross was her hope. So rather than being overwhelmed with griping and grumbling and complaining, she said, oh God, keep me near the cross. The closer I stay to the cross, the more grateful I will be that I have been set free, and the more unlikely I will be to gripe and grumble and complain against my fellow believers. Toward the end of her life, someone asked her, Fanny, if you could just have one wish in life, just one wish granted, what would your wish be? And this was her response. If I could have one wish, I'd wish that I might continue to be blind for the rest of my life. What a crazy wish, right? If I could have one wish, I'd wish that I might continue to be blind for the rest of my life, because after being blind for all these years, the first face I want to see is the face of Jesus. Why? Because that face was and now is not just her hope, but her reality. What's the greatest cure for griping and complaining and grumbling against one another? What's the greatest cure? The greatest cure that we could have for a life filled with griping and grumbling and complaining against one another? Well, behold, the greatest cure is the reality that you know, that you know, that you know that one day you will see the face of Jesus and you will see his face forever.